This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll get some mental health tips and resources as we continue to navigate this pandemic. We'll also hear from a familiar voice you know and likely miss hearing each week. We'll also hear from the nation's leading infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, about how California is doing with this virus. If you have questions for us, let us know on our message line, 433-9216, or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, June 26th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. Over the last few months, we've been checking in with mental health experts because, let's face it, this has not been an easy time. So today we're going to start off this program with an interview between Holly Drobny, the Community Services Program Manager for Butte County Behavioral Health, who recently spoke with NSPR's Angel Hiracha about some mental health tips and resources that are available during this pandemic. Here's their conversation.
What we are experiencing with this pandemic is widely viewed as unprecedented. How have you been able to gauge how to approach a situation since we really haven't seen anything like this before?
Yes, I love this question because while this is an unprecedented event, it's not the first time that Butte County has faced an unprecedented event. And so I would say if there's any silver lining to be taken away from our past experiences with disasters, it's that we have some experience in this department. We know that our community is capable. We know that we can rise to the occasion, and we have the knowledge that we are resilient and strong.
Have these events triggered an increase in people seeking services online?
Yeah, I would say so. And that is mostly because we've had to provide more services online. So we have seen an increase in those online services just because they have been expanded.
What sort of thing are people struggling with?
Everyone reacts differently to stressful situations, and I think it's important to understand that and to normalize that reactions are going to be different depending on the person. But I can say that many people are feeling anxiety, worry, and fear. Some people are stating that they feel very lonely and isolated with the social distancing. And then there are also some reporting an increase in frustration over the uncertainty of the future, as we can all understand and relate to. We're seeing many people reach out to our virtual peer support groups that Behavioral Health provides, and we are hearing similar accounts from our contracted providers. A really great example is the Northern Valley Talk Line has been able to expand its hours of operation from 5 hours a day to 10 hours a day. And that phone number is 855-582-5554.
For those looking, what services are currently being provided by Butte County Behavioral Health?
Butte County Behavioral Health serves individuals who have Medi-Cal or who do not have insurance, or anybody who is in an emotional crisis. Our outpatient clinic are still taking assessments over the phone. So if you or a loved one is interested in seeking treatment for mental health or substance abuse and you have not before, there's still an opportunity to engage in services. Our access and crisis line is available 24/7. Counselors are available if you would like to talk or ask questions about treatment options. We also have a peer support group available via Zoom. That's Monday through Friday. And all the information relating to services can be found at buttecounty.net/behavioralhealth.
From your perspective in the mental health world, what should the public know about the effects this pandemic is having on the local community?
Well, when social distancing and self-quarantine are needed to limit and control the spread of the disease, the continued social connectedness that is required to maintain mental health and substance abuse recovery are critically important. So I just want to urge people to consider virtual support. Although it is unconventional, it is still very effective. So if you or your loved one are experiencing symptoms of extreme stress, such as trouble sleeping, problems with eating, either too much or too little, inability to carry out routine daily activities, or even using drugs and alcohol to cope, I encourage you to speak to your healthcare provider or call one of the hotlines that we have listed at buttecounty.net/behavioralhealth.
Now, as a journalist, I feel like this is a terrible thing for me to say, but I see a lot of news daily. My life's currently consumed with news about COVID-19, and I think it's probably not a good thing. Do you think this constant monitoring of news affects mental health? And do you have any recommendations for people like me who either work in the media or are just news junkies?
Yes, right. So research does show that 24/7 media content tends to increase anxiety or worry. So one of the recommendations for situations such as these is to stay up to date on what is happening, but while limiting your media exposure. And you can do this by designating just one or two times of the day to review the news and then turning off notifications so that you can put your attention to the rest of your day. I think it's also, when we talk about media consumption, it's important to remember that children are especially affected by what they hear and see on TV, and being very mindful of that and their exposure to the media. And then specifically for you, for those who just can't stay away from the news, it's really important that you can lean on your support group, and you can talk about your experiences and feelings to your loved ones and friends. I want to urge you to try to maintain a sense of hope and positive thinking. And one tip for doing that is to consider keeping a journal where you can write down things you're grateful for or things that are going well. Another great tip is to relax your body often by doing things that work for you. So taking deep breaths, stretching, meditating, praying, engaging in activities that you enjoy. Those are going to be very helpful in helping you cope with all of that media consumption.
That was Holly Drobny, Community Services Program Manager for Butte County Behavioral Health, speaking with NSPR's Angel Haracha. And you can find a full list of mental health resources on our website, mynspr.org. You're listening to special coverage from North State Public Radio. When we get back, we'll hear from Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, about the coronavirus trends we're seeing in California and what we can do about them. Stay tuned.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Carbonite for protecting files from data loss and other online threats when working from home or in the office. If something happens to the original, there's an extra copy in the cloud. More at Carbonite.com. From Raymond James, a firm focused on transforming lives, businesses, and communities through tailored wealth management, banking, and capital market solutions. Learn more at RaymondJames.com. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org. Support for NPR comes from this station and from Empower Retirement, dedicated to helping more than 9.6 million people save and invest for a better future. Empower offers guidance for people to take action so they can focus on today while saving for tomorrow. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Metamucil, a fiber supplement containing psyllium, a plant-based fiber for trapping and removing waste in the digestive system. Designed to be taken every day. More at Metamucil.com. From C3. C3.ai software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at C3.ai. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Some parts of California are seeing a dramatic increase in COVID-19 hospitalizations, and other states like Florida and Texas are dealing with record high case numbers. During a Sacramento Press Club event on Wednesday, CAP Radio healthcare reporter Sammy Kayola interviewed Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, about the trends in the state and what we can do about it.
Where do you think our approach has succeeded, and how has it fallen short compared to other states that you've looked at?
Well, I think, as you know, the governor has really been ahead of the curve in doing what he did to save California from having worse of a situation than they have compared to other large states and important states in the country. One of the things that I think is really important is that as you start to open up and follow what you call the guidelines for opening America again, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. You have to start off by passing a gateway checkpoint. And if you succeed, you go to phase one. If you succeed, you'll go to phase two, and then ultimately phase three. Each of those have some restrictions. The thing I'm concerned about, I think that from the leadership that I'm seeing, it's being done correctly, but there's a difference of when you open up, namely following the guidelines, and what this, the people of California do in response. So what is happening as locations, be they whole states or cities or counties, open up, we're seeing a disconnect between what are the restrictions, guidelines for slowly taking the next step, being jumped over by many people, usually young people, who think that now that we're opening, opening means all or none, black or white, you know, either no restrictions or lockdown. There's a big difference between the two. And what we're seeing when you see on the radio, see on TV or in actual still pictures, people congregating without masks, even in a state or a city that is in a phase when they still should be doing some social distancing. They still should be wearing masks, and they're not. So I don't think it's anything that the state of California is doing wrong or not. It's what the response of the people are to what the opening process is.
Now, Governor Newsom actually said earlier this morning that he isn't planning to shut down the economy at this point. But do you think either now or looking toward the fall that we should be considering reclosing certain sectors?
I dealt with Gavin Newsom a fair amount, and you know, be that on governor's calls or in person. He's got a really good sense of what's to do. So I'm not going to recommend it, except that in many respects, I agree with him. You don't really need to go back to lockdown. You need to pause and say, wait a minute, we're starting to opening and things aren't going right. What do we need to do to correct that? Getting back to what I said before, I really do think we need to emphasize that. And it's not that you're blaming young people. I mean, you know, that's going nowhere. What you're saying is that it's totally understandable, the urge to get back as quickly as you can to what you perceive as normal in your life. But you've got to realize that you're part of a dynamic pandemic process. So you're getting infected, even though you don't realize it, is propagating the continuance of the outbreak. Because when you get infected, even if you're without symptoms, or even if you have mild symptoms, the chances are strong that you're going to infect somebody else who will infect somebody else who then will infect the vulnerable person. There really is a societal responsibility there.
Face coverings. Our statewide health orders ask people to wear them, but we're seeing lots of people are not doing that. What sorts of messaging can elected officials or public health officials put out to get people to comply?
There's no doubt. I mean, I think there was some confusion about masks in the beginning, and it's unfortunate it gave a mixed message. It was at a time when personal protective equipment, including masks, were in short supply, and it was clear that the people who really needed them were the healthcare workers who bravely put themselves in harm's way at a risk to take care of people with COVID disease. Now we have plenty of masks, and we know that cloth coverings can work as well as some masks. So everybody should wear a mask when out in public. Keep 6 feet distance. Don't congregate. If for one reason or other you are going to congregate, namely you're not listening to me, plan A is don't congregate. Plan B is that if you do congregate, wear a mask and keep the mask on all the time. Because your tendency is when you get animated and you start doing that, you pull the mask down. Don't do that. It really does not only protect you, but protects others in case you might have an infection that you don't even know about.
So I want to talk about the moment that we're in. You have been saying that the next few weeks are going to be crucial, especially for Sunbelt states. Is California in that position? How crucial are the next few weeks for us?
I think it is. I don't think it's as dramatic and as Florida is right now, because if you look at Florida, Florida has just gotten a lot of new cases. I think California is starting to see little bits of surges at the community level as they're opening up. I think that from the administrative standpoint, you have a good handle on what things to do. You know, and Californians have risen to the occasion on social issues so well in the past. You've been the leaders in the country on those things. This is an issue that really has social responsibility associated with it.
And one of the problems that we're seeing a lot, and I'm hearing this from county health officers, is that now that businesses are open, people are starting to get together again, you know, family gatherings. Right. What messaging can we give to discourage people from gathering in that way?
I do that, Sammy, and then, you know, I'm the Grinch that stole fun, the anti-fun guy. You know, I think it gets back to the original message that we were saying. It's so understandable, the urge and the need to get back to normal. Unfortunately, we have to put that aside a bit and realize that if the particular guideline that you are in right now says avoid congregation, keep 6 foot, you got to try to the best of your ability to have your social interactions in a modified way. It gets back to what I said in the beginning of the interview. It's not all or none. It's not lockdown or caution to the wind. There is an intermediate in there, and that's what we've got to do.
That was a conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci and CAP Radio healthcare reporter Sammy Keola, hosted by the Sacramento Press Club. You can find the full interview at capradio.org. There's one point in that conversation that Dr. Fauci made that I'd like to highlight, and that is the importance of the use of face masks. While the scientific community is in agreement that they help stop the spread of this virus, all you need to do is take a trip to the grocery store to see that the public does not have the same understanding. Today, we're heading up to the Ridge to hear from Kim Weir, who says if you don't think wearing a mask is important, you might want to think again.
Another day in paradise, masking and unmasking. Masks, masks, masks. For weeks, I kept busy making them. I hauled out Mom's old avocado green Singer Touch and Sew, popped in a new needle, and off I went. Most sewers in my circles were stitching up face coverings for healthcare workers, locally, just in case, because surgical masks and N95 respirators were suddenly impossible to come by, and something, even a homemade cloth mask, was better than nothing. Better than nothing. We've been hearing that phrase often. At first, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and others in the know, let us know that masks had no real value for just plain folks, which seems strange to me, odd and illogical, given how much emergency and medical crews needed them. Casting doubt on the usefulness of masks was no doubt intended to discourage us from buying up scarce N95s and surgical masks that would otherwise go to desperate and desperately unprotected people on the front lines. That underlying disconnect became more obvious as the full scope of the coronavirus and medical supply crises came into view. We were woefully unprepared for COVID-19 patients. Nationwide, hospitals, medical offices, and emergency responders were happy to stockpile even cloth masks, just in case. Better than nothing. So, when I sat down to my sewing machine, better than nothing was more than good enough for me. Enough to spur me to furiously sew up masks for family, friends, and co-workers. We know almost nothing about this virus, even now. But early on, doctors and others on the COVID-19 front lines speculated about its uneven impacts. Could it be that how sick people got was somehow dose-related? The greater the exposure, the sicker you got? That possibility could explain why some healthy young people die within days, while others, of all ages, have few or no symptoms at all. So again, better than nothing seems pretty good in my book. Cloth masks are better than nothing, because even the CDC says so now. Even if they cut viral exposure by only 50%, way better than nothing. And yet, we seem to be of two minds, at least two minds, when it comes to wearing masks. Wearing them or seeing others wear them stirs the deep, deep waters of human history somehow. Layers of historic human experience and social expression. Memories we don't typically tap into. Masks have been part of most cultures, our ceremonies and rituals, since the beginning of human time. They are immensely powerful symbols with many meanings. Shamans wore masks, and still wear them, to enter into communion with God and the spirit world, for healing and other transformations, and to otherwise influence the course of events. We have also used them, socially, to signify honor and life transitions, the wedding veil, for example, and to inflict shame and social distance. Early humans wore masks for religious purposes, yes, as we still do. We think of masks as covering the face, though they sometimes adorn the entire body. But we also wear masks for practical purposes, to provide protection during sports, hunting, and war. Masks are a form of decoration and art, too, fashion, and performance in almost every culture around the world. And we hide behind masks, figuratively, but also literally. Masks become a form of disguise, helping us escape from everyday life. In the ancient world, think of those wild revelries dedicated to Dionysus and other Greek mystery cults, and the social role reversals typical of Roman Saturnalia festivals. In more modern times, Mardi Gras and Carnival, anyone? Masks. Masquerades. As most of us have noticed lately, masks can become political. Even our language suggests this, as political leaders mask their true intentions and unmask those of others. But perhaps even this should be no surprise. In ancient Rome, the word persona meant a mask, yet also someone granted full Roman citizenship. Still, we citizens here today disagree about the importance of wearing masks in public, whether they're even needed to protect others as well as ourselves. Speaking strictly for myself, it's shocking that the president won't wear a face mask in public, if only as a sign of solidarity and empathy. I'm guessing this decision is at least partly symbolic, a gesture intended to resonate with his base, those he has encouraged to liberate states from public health precautions. But the gesture signals to other Americans a complete lack of regard for those around him and for community health in general. It also stunned me, again, these are strictly my own opinions, that the vice president wore no face mask even during public photo ops while he delivered supplies to a nursing home and also when he visited patients recovering from COVID-19 at the Mayo Clinic. Shortly after, we learned that two people working closely with our leaders, White House staffers who were walking around the West Wing barefaced day after day, both tested positive for the coronavirus, which has an incubation period of up to 14 days, testing or no testing, and spreads easily even when people have no symptoms, one of the reasons it's so lethal. And now we learn that the instant test used by the White House to determine COVID-19 status can generate false negative results almost half the time. To me, this public drama is astonishing, a display of relentless recklessness over reasonable caution and precautions. To me, it demonstrates that unyielding ideology can be not just foolish, but fatal. I am not a Republican, which you may have guessed, but I come from a long line of them on both sides of my family. So I understand conservatism, or what used to be conservatism. It's in my blood. And I understand, bone deep, what used to be bedrock Republican principles. In my family, the tradition marches like Union Army infantry all the way back to the days when Republicans really were the party of Lincoln, in principle and action. But if I were a Republican today, if I thought it my patriotic duty to make sure both President Trump and Vice President Pence serve another term in the White House, I would insist that they mend their ways and in a New York minute. Both of them act as if this horrible disease will just go away if you ignore it, as if you act like it poses no threat, it suddenly doesn't. The definition of magical thinking, and pretty crazy if you ask me. And it's almost as if neither of them has even considered the broader yet very immediate implications of such crazy risk-taking, risks magnified by the matching behavior of the people around them, those forced by job description or inspired by political allegiance to follow their leads, those walking alongside them in a vast viral echo chamber. If the number of people who have died already isn't enough to bring about change, and people are still dying in unbearable numbers every day, if the obvious need to inspire caution among their own followers isn't enough, the voters they're counting on come November, I can think of at least one other possibility that might scare up a new attitude. I'm thinking you Republicans out there need to call or email the president and the vice president right away, just to remind them who the U.S. Constitution says will become president next, should anything happen to the two of them. Next in line, according to the rules of presidential succession, is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. That's right. That would be Speaker Nancy Pelosi, or, if the Grim Reaper gets the upper hand, President Nancy Pelosi.
That was Kim Weir with her opinions on why you might want to consider getting on board with masks. And that is your program. But before we head out, let's play a few of your opinions on reopening.
I just recently purchased a campground in Feather River, and right now we are reluctant to open it up. It is nice to see people kind of doing family camping along the river. Unfortunately, though, with all the businesses closed, there's really no place for them to use a restroom. I do let people use my restroom if they do come and ask me personally, but we still think it's probably better to postpone it to at least July 4th to open.
I have a business that has been closed for 3 months. Today was the first day I was able to go back and do my healing touch work that so many of my clients really value. They were so happy to come back. I was really happy to be with them. I felt like it was very safe. There were masks, a lot of cleaning, 3 months without income, no unemployment insurance has come, even though I've applied. It was a really challenging 3 months to have the government just shut down my business, no alternative income, and I hope that doesn't happen again.
If you have any thoughts for us, you can leave them on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, Angel Horacha, Eric Rodeville, Kylo Castilla, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. A special thanks to Cap Radio. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30 or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned.